It's the JT the Brick Show.
If you're in the relentless pursuit of finding the competitive edge in everything you're doing, you got to be on.
100%. You know, I expect to win every time I come on the field. I don't care what we're doing. You know what I mean? It's every drill, everything we do. I'm expecting to win.
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 25 years.
This is going to be a battle. This is going to be physical. This is going to be old school football.
Hey, yes, sir. As a great man once said, just win, baby.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Hour number two of the JT the Brick Show. Vince Sapienza filling in for JT as the Raiders, along with JT, hopping on a bird, getting set. The Emerald City, Pacific Northwest, Seattle, Washington is the site of the preseason opener for the Silver and Black tomorrow night. Football's back. Football is back, and away we go. Training camp is in full go. The competition is high. Excitement and energy remains very high. But now we start to weed out the roster. This is where we really start to see who's going to be part of the team in 2025, the fall, and who is not. And as we look to the question of the day, what are you looking to accomplish? And who do you think has the most to accomplish? 702-365-9200 is the number. Ginslinger says, looking at that defensive secondary as a whole, which is obviously a great way to start. Ja'Corian Bennett just a couple days ago gets traded to Philly as part of the Birds. In comes Earl Thomas Booker IV, added to that defensive line rotation. And so now that quartet of corners that we've been talking about for weeks now seems set in stone. Ja'Corian Bennett, no longer part of the equation, so it's Darian Porter, it's Eric Stokes, it's DeCamrion Richardson, and JT Woods now is kind of that core four in the cornerback room in terms of the secondary. Obviously, Darnay Holmes, Thomas Harper, they're all there in the mix as well. But when we talk about the outside, that's who we're looking at. And they're going to get a lot of run this preseason. They should. It's I don't want to say it's a thin cornerback room, but fairly inexperienced. So the reps are going to count in a massive and a major way. And Bobby, before we get too much further, as we closed out hour number one, we were talking about Vrabel jumping into scrums and scuffles and which coaches. Jerry reminds us on the text line, Deuce Gruden would be my pick. Built like a tank, looks like he'll knock your head off. LOL. That's a good pick. For Raiders coaches, and I guess we'll extend it to staff members and ancillary members of the coaching staff as well. But as we look into what can be accomplished, what are you looking to accomplish? I said it at the top of the hour, in hour number one, it has to be the offensive line. You have to get that cohesion going. You want that offense running from the get-go. Week one in Foxborough, running it down Vrabel and the defense's throat from the get-go. Ashton Jeanty, Raheem Mostert, Zamir White, Zeus. Let him just pound that New England defensive line. Spillane at the linebacker core. Let him get reacquainted just a little bit. And to kind of help us break down and further the cause of what we need to be looking at with the offensive line, specifically in preseason game number one. This is presuming we do see that first unit of five on the offensive line trot out onto the field for a drive or two in Seattle. Andy Phillips, Pro Football Hall of Fame writer, a former Green Bay Packers offensive lineman. He's a best-selling author as well. Draft Zero, you find it up on Amazon. But he really helps us, gets us going, gets our minds right, get our eyes right, what we need to be looking at. And he joins us now here on the JT the Brick Show. All right, Andy, let's just jump right into it. The Raiders kick off their preseason schedule tomorrow night. Football is back for the Silver and Black and Raider Nation as a whole, but all eyes are going to be on a portion of the team that you are very familiar with, that offensive line. Now, again, we've talked about this over the last couple months, you and here with us, in terms of Jackson Powers-Johnson was supposed to be the guy at center. It's kind of a big surprise that Jordan Meredith has made the ascension that he has. Looks like JPJ is going to be battling Alex Kappa for that right guard spot. When you stare at this preseason game, what are you looking at to tell you if things are fitting the right way with Jordan Meredith at center, Jackson Powers-Johnson at right guard?
I'm with you. I'm surprised that JPJ isn't the leader at center. Just from the standpoint of where they drafted him, his age and the fact that I do think he fits the center mold in a Chip Kelly offense. But if we're talking about if it's working, that means anytime you get into the combination blocks, is it gelling? Do they look good? Are the guys getting to the second level? Is the line of scrimmage when you're watching on TV, you're watching that sideline view, if you can pause it, is there displacement? Is the line of scrimmage level in getting a yard and a half on the run plays down the field? And the combination box seem to gel. That'd be the stuff that I look for, and is it working? Now, obviously, everyone can look and see if a guy gets beat in the pass rush move, and that's going to be up to the coaches to realize if that's something that can be fixed, or has that been an ongoing problem during camp that doesn't seem like it's going to get resolved here in the next 4 weeks. So those are the things that the coaches can handle. But what I'm looking for in terms of is this our five, is this our three inside, comes to the combination blocks, the communication, and does it just seem to be gelling? Are we getting the proper movement on the double teams to make it work? But again, if you're sitting at a position where you're looking at Kappa, a vet who's coming off the worst year of his career, and a young guy who you invested high capital in the draft in and should be an ascending player, I really got to say, I don't care how much money you threw at Kappa, which wasn't that much, I got to imagine they value the younger guy in the draft capital that they spent on him. So it made me seem that they want JPJ to play. Mm-hmm. But again, Meredith, maybe they know what they're getting out of JPJ at center. Maybe they think the higher upside is with him at guard, but maybe they know they can always bump him back at Meredith in the first couple preseason games. Just can't handle the communication or just the pressure of playing center in the National Football League at the level you need to play to be a starter.
We're talking to former NFL offensive lineman Andy Phillips here on the JT the Brick Show. All right, Andy, so staying right there for a minute, you talked about, you know, how they're working together. Talk about the difficulty of a center moving to the guard spot and vice versa, because that's what we have in this situation, a guard moving to the center spot in Jordan Meredith, which we've never seen, at least at this level. So can you talk about that difficulty and then maybe the different nuances that exist there?
Well, it's mentally. Going to center in most offenses, you're directing traffic. And the rest of the offense, at least from the upfront standpoint, especially on a run play, they're not making their calls. You know, your tight ends and your tackles aren't going to make, you know, their call, whatever their combination block would be on a certain play, likely until the center makes the first call. Calls work inside out in the National Football League and most colleges from a assignment standpoint. So the center is the one that has to get the line of scrimmage fast, identify the defense, the personnel, and what defense they're in, whether it's 4-3, 4-2-5, nickel, dime. You have to identify all that. Call the mic. And the mic isn't the guy who's in the program listed as MLB for the fans out there. The mic is based on the formation. Sometimes when you play certain teams, 54 might be the mic, but on another formation in another area and another, depending on your formation and where they're sitting, it could be 48's the mic. So you have to do all of that kind of stuff before the play. And now you're working on, you're not just in a stance ready to fire out. You have one part of your body on a run play that is going to be moving in the exact opposite direction than you're going, and that's your arm snap and ball to have a clean exchange. And if you've never played the center position, the shotgun snaps, you have to get those down on all of your movements. So whether it's you're going to be opening up and pulling to the right and you got to still get that snap on the numbers, or you're going to be setting deep in a hole position in a pass block where maybe you have 2-3 techniques and you're going to be setting directly vertical, looking both sides. So it's moving to center is much harder mentally and from a niche technique standpoint than, say, going the other way. But I'll say this. I had the opportunity in 2015 with Green Bay where I played guard most of my college career with a little bit of center, and I kind of nestled in at center for the most part during training camp, and I was much more comfortable after starting 3 straight years at left guard at Central Michigan. I was actually much more comfortable at the center position in Green Bay for one reason or another. I liked taking command. My highest value to the team was my knowledge of the offense and my ability to be loud, vocal, and communicate everything so nobody in the stadium would have any question what we're doing in terms of the communication. I had confidence in what I was doing there, and I kind of nestled in there. Plus, I felt like in the offense that Mike McCarthy was running back then, I felt like my movement skills were a benefit more at center than at guard when, you know, those were the teams that had the guards of Josh Sitton and T.J. Leonard averaging 335 pounds apiece, where the centers were usually the 6'2", 295, 300 guys. So it just totally depends on the offense. But, again, if you're bumping into center, it's all about the communication process that you just do not have to have the responsibility of that guard.
Andy Phillips here with us on the JT the Brick Show. Andy, let's stay down memory lane for a second. And when you think of preseason, right, and your resume and everything that you went through, what sticks out? Because I think for a lot of fans, you know, preseason gets here and it's like, okay, let's get to the regular season now. But this is such a critical time for roster reshaping, construction, the younger players, bubble players. Take us back to your time when you were in those NFL locker rooms and the importance of preseason and maybe your favorite memories from the preseason.
Yeah, you know, it was an incredible ride in 2015. I tried out after the draft with the Packers and was the only tryout guy to get a contract. And then from there, it's like every day you don't know if you have a job. And that's everybody outside of probably the top 40 guys that know they're either making this team or maybe they're going to get – only reason they'd be getting cut is for contract. Maybe it's a little too high, but then they'll be signed within 24 hours of another team. Outside of that, when you head into camp, you got about 50 guys that know any single moment they can be cut. So that's the pressure of it. Now, some of the favorite parts I had were, listen, the games were awesome. You know, I played in all four preseason games back when you had four of them. You know, being on the same field as Tom Brady, Gronk, Belichick in week one, then going week two, going to Pittsburgh and be on the same field as Ben Roethlisberger and Mike Tomlin. Then going home and you're playing against the Eagles. And then the last game at Lambeau Field against, you know, the Sean Payton Saints. I mean, it was cool for me, who's a historian of the game, be able to say I shared the field with just a ton of Hall of Famers. You know, not to slight any organizations, but some guys' preseason schedule consists of playing at Jacksonville and at Cleveland, and mine consists of playing the Dynasty Patriots, the Steelers, who have six rings, and then two games at Lambeau Field. So it was pretty cool for me, as a guy who just loves the NFL, to share the field and play in those stadiums. But my favorite moments, and the ones that always stick out to me, are still in practice, in training camp, because it's the grind. And honestly, that's when I got my best work in, because when I would play the second half of preseason games or the fourth quarter, yeah, I have to prove I can do it in the game feel, in the game level, against other guys. But I'm playing against other guys who are on par with me, you know, third stringers trying to make the team. In practice, I'm going against Julius Peppers. I'm going against B.J. Raji and Clay Matthews and all that kind of stuff. So the real work you're getting in the pressurized moments are honestly more there, because it's like, yeah, they want to see you in a game setting to see if you can handle the pressure of 100,000 on you and playing some guys in different jerseys. But to know if you can really make this team, are you going to be able to block the guys you would have to block weeks 1 through 18? So for me, going against Julius Peppers were some of my favorite memories. A guy who's top five sacks all time in the history of football, who is still just an absolute maniac at 35 years old on the practice field. So those are the moments for me that I'll always treasure.
Andy, one more before we let you go. When we talk about the question on this program, we're asking, you know, what are you trying to accomplish, right, from a team perspective? Obviously, injury-free. Obviously, you know, getting a lot of things on tape. But when you go back to your team, what was the biggest message in terms of what the team was trying to accomplish in the preseason in terms of that competition?
Yeah, well, first off, there's probably, of the starting 22 guys, not including special teams, there's probably 3 to 4 positions that you're coming into training camp with true competition. So you're trying to finalize that, and preferably finalize that by about right now. You know, a lot of guys, you know, you listen to Dan Campbell talk in Detroit about them needing to finalize the interior of their offensive line, whether a guy like Graham Glasgow is going to play center or guard with the late retirement of Ragnow this spring. He said the hope would be to have that finalized in the first 10 days of camp. So that's number one, is trying to just finalize, especially on the O-line, trying to finalize as fast as possible who your five are so you can really get gelling and going into week one with a lot of reps together. Then the second thing, like you said, is injuries. And I think anything else from there is all just about the team and bringing each other together, common goals, getting everybody on the same page, maybe you have an identity you're going into, you know, the first half of your season with pre-buy, that you have a theme, you have an identity, you have something you're trying to accomplish, whether it's, hey, we're going to be a team this year that we own third and short, or we own goal line, or we own the red zone based on things that we need to work on. So your theme during camp might be, listen, we were 28th in the league last year in red zone percentage. That's something as an offense we need to get up. So your entire theme during camp is going to be those red zone periods are going to be at a much higher importance and higher intensity than maybe years past. Because you got to understand, when you're dealing with guys who have done this, some guys 8, some guys 15 years, it's all about re-energizing them and having certain goals and saying, hey, for the next week, we're highly prioritizing red zone. We need to improve in the red zone if we want to get to where we want to get to during the season. And it's creating those goals that everyone as a group, whether it's an offensive line, an offense in general, a defense in general, or an entire team, can just wrap their heads around and totally have buy-in to really get you through week to week. Because once you start a season, that's what it is. Every week is different. One game plan that you're going to have against the Saints could be completely different than the game plan you have against the Chargers. So, as you move forward in that sense, that's kind of the mindset you just want to get your guys into.
Very quickly, as a writer for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, obviously a fantastic weekend in Cannes, near and dear to the hearts of Raider Nation, as one of their own, Eric Allen, a Hall of Fame human, now gets immortalized into the Hall as well. Just a great class overall, and I imagine a great weekend.
Yeah. And listen, Eric Allen was overdue. Sterling Sharp, I think he was overdue. I'm much more in line with I don't think this is baseball where you need to have, you know, if you're a power hitter and you don't have 500 career home runs, you can't get in. Mm-hmm. I'm much more in the belief of, if you gave me 3 to 5 years where you were top three at your own position, to me, you have a real shot. So a guy like Sterling Sharp, a Triple Crown winner, who for a 3 to 4 year period there in the 90s, his only peer, in my opinion, was Jerry Rice during that period. Mm-hmm. That's a guy who should have been in a long time ago. I mean, I thought when Terrell Davis went in, you know, years back, that kind of at least broke the mold. That had been really not touched to that capacity since Gale Sayers went in. But as soon as TD went in, I thought there was a shot for Sterling. So I'm glad he got in as well. I think you need to see that more at the running back position moving forward, because – if we still have our benchmarks with that running back, it used to be, you know, it was 10,000 yards per career in the regular season. If you don't touch 10,000 yards, you have no shot. Like, we're not considering you. I think we're going to see moving forward with the running back position how you don't always get the guys for 8 years anymore starting because of, hey, we got a 22-year-old that we're paying a lot less than you coming in. The days of the Emmitt Smiths of the world are long gone outside of, it sounds like, Derrick Henry right now. So I think we're going to have to reevaluate who we let in because the game's changing. So a guy like Christian McCaffrey, if Christian McCaffrey ends his career with 9,000 career rushing yards, that make him not a Hall of Famer? I think we just need to make sure we're evaluating the player during their prime over maybe the longevity. So that was kind of it for this class. I really took that with Sterling getting in finally. I'm hoping the Hall's seeing that.
He is a writer for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He is a number one best-selling author, Round Zero, Inside the NFL Draft, former Packer, and he's a Lombardi and Doak Walker Award voter. We need to get into the college game here next time we chat. But the next time we chat, Andy, we will have some tape to dissect and digest. We appreciate the insight and the analysis moving forward. We'll chat soon.
I appreciate you guys. Have a good one.
He is Andy Phillips. Follow him on the X at APhil66. Now, that is a guy that I value very much, his insight and him breaking down that offensive line position. Obviously, he's a guy who lived it. He's a guy that's made his bread and was able to, you know, to some success, find the different levels of being able to go from a guard to a center and play all along the offensive line. So it's really fascinating stuff to hear what a Jackson Powers Johnson and a Jordan Meredith right now are kind of going through in the throngs of training camp and what they're battling as they get set for the preseason game. Also interesting stuff, what he had to say about the Pro Football Hall of Fame, about, you know, who gets in, the longevity. It's not like baseball. You know, I know Raider Nation, and rightfully so, the Jim Plunkett's of the world need to get in. There's a long list of Raiders that feel like they should still get, they need to get into the Hall, long overdue. Shane Leckler's a guy that feels like he might be the next one. Maybe, possibly. 702-365-9200 is the number. We're asking the question. What boxes do you need to see checked? What are you trying to accomplish in preseason game number one? We're going to talk to Caleb Rogers, rookie offensive lineman, coming up here on the JT the Brick Show. It's Raider Nation Radio, 920.
Well, really, that's a really good question because it came. It was an experiment, you know, coming out of USC to go to the NFL and to see if the way we had developed the culture that we had created, the concept of competing the way we did, would carry over. And mostly it was the way we treated the people in our program. I wasn't sure. I had an inkling that it would be okay, but I didn't know, and a lot of people probably questioned it as well. But we didn't change anything. We maintained the philosophy. We adapted to the players and, of course, the game, and felt, after it's said and done, I feel really good about the time we spent there, that we were able to stay with what we believed in and make it work out. That's really what stands out about it. Okay.
Raiders head coach Pete Carroll, when asked about the philosophy being able to carry over from USC in college and bring it to the pros in the National Football League and carry that here into Las Vegas from Seattle, his year off, and then with the Raiders. And it is a tried and true recipe that has worked at multiple levels to the highest degree of success. And so that journey, once again, to find that success begins, well, it's already underway, if we're being honest. But from a game standpoint, it starts with preseason game number one in Seattle tomorrow. And if you're Raider Nation, I know this has been talked about and it's a couple weeks old, but I can't help but think, if I'm sitting there and I'm listening to my head coach sitting there and say, we're going to win a whole bunch of games, and starting quick, out of the gate, ready to go. I mean, I don't know how you're not fired up. And it kind of begs the question, you know, I know it's preseason. We'll wait and see what starters play, which ones don't. But this has got to be one of the most exciting preseason debuts for a coach, a new regime, a new staff, and quite a while for the Raiders that have seen their fair share of different staffs and different regimes kind of turn over. This one feels as optimistic, if not more so, than any other in recent memory. Obviously, the future remains to be seen, but excitement remains high, and there's a lot of excitement for this 2025 rookie class, obviously highlighted by an Ashton Jeanty, the Boise State back, being able to transition into the pros and kind of do what he did at the college level and bring it to the NFL. Everything we've seen at training camp looks like this kid is ready for the moment and ready to kind of be that guy, be that number one back in the NFL. The receivers have gotten a lot of love. Jack Besh, specifically Dante Thornton Jr. as well, named as a starter on the Raiders depth chart, getting all the run with the ones. Jack Besh kind of battling for that spot with Trey Tucker. He's been playing behind Jacoby Myers because he's been playing in that slot with the twos. But when you're looking at a camp battle, if you're going to look at it that way, he's really battling a Trey Tucker for reps and for time with the ones. So in terms of what you want to accomplish, he has a lot to accomplish when he gets in the game tomorrow night. But, you know, as you go down this 2025 rookie class, another guy that a lot of people are high on, this organization is very, very high on, is rookie offensive lineman Caleb Rogers. And obviously his physical traits are what they are, but it's his maturity, his leadership, his ability to kind of round up the other guys. And I had the chance to go one-on-one with the Raiders rookie O-lineman to talk about a number of things, including the transition from college to the pros.
I mean, it's been a fun, exciting transition. I feel like it's been pretty seamless in the procedure sense. Something that we talk about a lot at Texas Tech is being a pro. We preach about being a pro, how to be a pro. And so coming into this next step, Also being around so many great people who have the blueprint, you know, you've got the training room, you've got the equipment staff, you've got the weight room who are all trying to give you all the tools. And then you've got someone as great as Max Crosby who's doing it every single day. And so you don't have to stick right by his hip and do exactly what he's doing because you need to figure out what works for you. But you've got the blueprint laid out here for you so you can fit yourself into it and figure it out. And so in the sense of how to get the job done, it hasn't been too bad. I mean, I'm excited to continue to develop as a player and to evolve as a player in that sense in different aspects. But in the sense of getting the job done and how to do it, it's handled very well here. It's awesome.
We're going to take a deep dive into what's been going on at training camp. But not only are you adjusting to life in the NFL, you're adjusting to life here in Las Vegas. Yeah. What has that transition been like? You're a girl dad, you have family. What has been that whirlwind?
I mean, it's very interesting. It's having them out here is awesome. Being able to bring her, bring my daughter out to practice and have her help me take off my tape is an awesome experience. P is very welcoming when it comes to just being family oriented and having the family involved, and so that's extremely appreciated on my part. And I mean, I love it. Like, I love every single part of it. I'm excited. I feel like every single day or every single week we've got a new first. We had the mock game this last weekend, so their first time in the stadium, their first time kind of getting into the routine, my first time doing that. And soon I'll be going to, we'll be going to Seattle this week. I'll be coming home at 3 a.m. and then I'll be waking up the next day. I'll have to go to being the dad and then go to work. And so just figuring it out, getting adjusted, you know, it's awesome. I really appreciate the culture around here because they're extremely appreciative of who we are, mm-hmm. being who we are. Like, yes, we're football players, and there is a blueprint, and there's something that we all need to get done. There's a job we all have to do, but they want us to do it how we need to do it, how Caleb Rogers needs to get it done in order to be successful. So it's awesome.
What was their experience like at Allegiant?
They loved it. See, they didn't do the field passes this week, okay. So she was a little frustrated didn't get to go on the field.
Come on, Dad.
That one's on me. But, they really enjoyed doing it. Chloe's very much so on making Cali walk right now because – you're going to get used to this. It's a lot. It's going to be big stadiums, a lot of walking. We're going to have them go to one or two away games this year, too. So it'll be, like I said, a lot of firsts this year. It'll be awesome.
All right. You did get a lot of field access at that mock game on Saturday. How do you take something like that in? It's training camp. It is a practice, but a mock game. But you're in this new environment. You know, Pete's keeping you on your toes with the competition, the energy level. What was that experience? Describe it for us and how you think you handled it.
So going into a new environment, you know, something like that where it's not exactly the game, but it's a mock-up of it. You know, it's meant to simulate it. It can kind of emphasize the fact that don't make too much of where you are. Mm. And we kind of got the biggest example ever good of that in 2020 with COVID. Pulling the fans out of the stadium, how differently of a player are you going to be if there's no one watching? And so it's really interesting how I've been able to just continue to carry that throughout my career. Every time I'm in a new stadium, every time I'm in a new environment, am I going to let that change who I am? Am I going to let that change my routine, change the mentality that I have, change the type of player I am? But that's where we got to be consistent. And so that's just something we talk about a lot. And I personally talk about it a lot is just being consistent, being the same person every single day. So stick to the routine. Again, I'm trying to figure out that routine. Of what it's looking like and having the support that we have. The strength staff is incredible. The nutrition staff is incredible. The way they're willing to talk to you, help you build that plan, willing to give you the tool, but also let you know that don't be afraid to tweak your tool. We're meant to adapt and change as players as we continue to figure this out. So, yes, you're going to change in different environments, but that's based on what you need. But you don't have to change on different environments because of where you're standing.
We've had 10 on-field practice days thus far. How much change have you experienced from that first day? Again, I know last week or so has been with pads, so it's a little different, especially for you big guys. But how big of a change has that been from day one on the field to day 10?
So sticking to the same thing I was just talking about, and you talking about like change, tying those two things in together, is I'm transitioning from tackle to guard,
right?
Coming from college to the NFL. And also I'm playing center.
Yeah, I want to ask you about
that. Yeah, so same thing. I've got to keep my same mentality of every single day of being or doing the same work every single day. Instead of talking about being, like, I could be so worried about being with the ones right now or being with the twos, like when they're moving me around. But instead, I'm trying to focus on doing the work to be the number one center, doing the work to be the number one guard. Wherever they need me, whoever they need me to be, I'm working on doing that instead of focusing on being it for them. And that way, I don't have to, I'm ready. I know, like, I know when I'm ready. Mm-hmm. No, I'm going to do the work to be ready continuously so that way I'll never change. And so flipping back and forth, moving inside, moving right to left, like same thing in that stadium. I was playing right and left guard right. every other series. I love it. I mean, just.
You asked for it. Yes. One of your first availabilities with the media, you told us, you said, hey, I'm asking to play all five positions. I want to know all five positions, and I want to perfect my craft at all five of them. Well, you're getting what you want right now.
And I really appreciate that from them. They're extremely hard on me, and they push me, and I think they have high expectations for me, and, I mean, that's a privilege. So I'm trying to continue to keep that consistency and take a step forward every single day. That's something that Pete talks about. It's just taking one step forward. And so offensive line is a rare position. You might get a certain blocking combination once a practice, and you might not see it again until a different practice. And especially when we playing both sides, I might get it on the left of this practice. I might not get it on the right until a week later. So we have to be extremely intentional about the way that we're working and the way that, especially myself, switching back and forth on like the steps I'm taking. Being intentional when the opportunity arises to work on something. And so it's awesome. I love it because it's allowing me to understand so much more about the people I'm working around. If I'm playing left guard and we work a technique, and then the next time I run center, we work that same technique, I'm like, oh, at left guard, I could do that more for my center. And the same thing, when I'm at left guard, I can be, oh, I could do that more for my center. So it just allows me to understand the game at a higher level, allows me to understand the positions at a higher level, and it's awesome.
You know, there's a lot of energy, excitement. Those are kind of the two buzzwords that have been going on around this organization all offseason long. One of the big reasons why is this 2025 rookie class that you are obviously a part of. Last week we had Dante Thornton Jr. in talking about, you know, rising to those expectations, if you will, and coming together as a rookie class, both the drafted and undrafted. And he singled you out as a guy that every day, if somebody needs a pick-me-up, especially for him, you're that guy. Where does that come from? Like, you know, it's probably easy to be wide-eyed, right, in a situation like this. But he pointed to you as one of those guys that helps keep him grounded and also helps rise up his game. So I don't know if you've heard that before or how many of you guys you're doing that for, but where does that come from and how did that all begin for you?
I mean, honestly, where does it come from? I think I'd have to say that I think it's just like a gift that I've been given from God. I think I have an extreme ability to be able to read people's emotions, be intentional with them, the conversations that I have, and make people comfortable when I talk to them. And so at the same time, there's days when I know I can just see it in Dante's eyes, whether he's got it or he doesn't, and that comes from being human. Yeah. I mean, we all have something in our life that's existing, and like I said, it's about doing our job, but we are all still being human. So doing your job can get really hard sometimes. So us all being together is extremely important, and I sent a text to the guys the other day saying that I've tried to be good friends to everybody, but I want to be a better man of God towards everybody. Mm-hmm. And just being able to allow people to lean on each other because through faith, it just allows everyone to lean on each other, be more vulnerable, and be more comfortable around each other, knowing that it's out of a place of just pure, I don't know the word I'm looking for, but I mean, just trying to be there for somebody. Right. It's hard. This is something being we're present. All going through. Yes, being extremely present. And so when I'm in that locker room, I have a speaker. I'll cut on some music, play some old school stuff, and just try to ask some people some stuff about how they're doing conversations because, I mean, we're working from 5 a.m. to 7 p.m., mm-hmm. and we all love it. But we also all have our own stuff going on. So it's okay for us to be able to talk and communicate and be the people that we are.
I want to get into that music mix next time we talk. But before we let you go, last one, it's game week, mm-hmm. right? Or you're getting ready for your first NFL game, preseason or not. You're going to get a lot of reps. Pete Carroll's talked about, you know, this is going to be a big opportunity on the road in Seattle. I guess, in short, how excited are you for this opportunity?
Man, I mean, I sent a text to my guys the other day back home, but my NFL season starts now. I mean, my NFL season started, you could say, when fall camp started, but it's a much different turnaround. I mean, in college, you've got 4 weeks, and then you've got a week leading up to the mock game, and then you've got game week. Mm-hmm. We've got a week of camp, we've got the mock game, and then it's game week. And so it's awesome. I mean, we're here. It's happening quick. I mean, there's nothing better than football, and there's no better way to prepare yourself for football than to play football. And so I'm excited. I'm ready to get on the road with all these guys. Like Dante said, like I said, we're all super close. And so I'm excited to just do this with us as a group, and just continue to be in our present, continue to be around each other, take advantage of the opportunities that I have, whether I'm at left guard, whether I'm at right guard, whether I'm at center. How intentional can I be? Can I get that snap back there the way I'm supposed to? Can I be on my landmarks the way I'm supposed to? Can I pass the twist over so my so my center doesn't get picked? Like, and so, I mean, just being able to be a part of this with this group, I mean, it's incredible. Like I said, the culture is incredible. There's no ego in this building. It's awesome to be a part of, top to bottom, head coach to janitor. My man Hugo, shout out to him. It's incredible, and I'm just so happy to be here.
Well, I think I can speak for all of Raider Nation. They're happy to have you as well. Caleb Rogers, Raiders rookie offensive lineman. Caleb, we look forward to seeing you out on the field in Seattle. We'll do this again soon.
Awesome. Sounds great.
I'm never going to pass up an opportunity to interview or chat with that young man. Caleb Rogers is as insightful and as down-to-earth and as thoughtful as any young player in the NFL I've come across. And he's a kid who just, in short, kind of gets it, right? I mean, he doesn't know what he doesn't know, and he knows that. And he's thirsty for knowledge. He's excited. I remember his first presser during rookie minicamp. He was like, the first day, I challenged all the coaches. I want to learn every position along the offensive line. I want to learn every single one. And it's one thing to do. And then the coaches say, okay, here we go. And he's been lining up all along the offensive line. And I think kind of one of the biggest surprises, at least for him in such a short time, is he was getting reps at center, and he was getting those reps at center. And I just thought it was very fascinating as we continue to kind of have the conversation and the microscope under Jordan Meredith and Jackson Powers Johnson and that relationship and that change. You know, Caleb Rogers is learning all those different positions as well. Again, what does it mean for this season? I don't know how much it's going to mean, if any, in terms of seeing him on the field, number 76. But this is a guy that, as I mentioned, continues to be mentioned around the organization, after practices, asking, hey, keep an eye on that guy. Have you seen that guy? So I'm excited to see what he looks like in Seattle, no doubt. That is a kid that has a lot to accomplish, not only in his career, but as we pare it down to preseason game number one, there's a lot he can accomplish, and I think we'll see him all along the offensive line against the Seahawks. It's the JT the Brick Show on Raider Nation Radio 920. More ahead.
Man, some of the best guys I've played with, obviously. I think Brock is, you know, 1-1 when it comes to tight ends in this league. And I think Mike and Ian are not too far behind them, man. We got some really, really talented guys. I think Q's been doing a great job. Albert O made a huge catch today. I think, man, the tight ends coach is doing a great job with those guys. And then Chip's putting them in positions to make some plays, and they're going out there and executing.
Raiders quarterback Geno Smith talking about his tight end room. Brock Bowers, 1-1. Yeah, that's an easy assessment. Geno realized that very quickly in his arrival in Las Vegas. Michael Mayer, though, not far behind him, he says, and, you know, I think he's going to show that maybe he's not. The intentionality that is being used, Michael Mayer in this offense, is early. It is often. We saw it again in the mock game. We've seen it all through training camp. And Ian Thomas continues to be a contributor and will be one for this offense. But, you know, speaking of tight ends, if Brock is 1-1 on the field, George Kittle currently in the NFL might be 1-1 in front of a microphone. Might be the next Pat McAfee, if there is a next Pat McAfee. And, you know, was it apparently the NFL teams, players, got a memo about the banning of smelling salts and ammonia during games and during the usage of games because it masks concussions and it's not good for you, apparently. It doesn't help the doctors to identify concussions. Take a listen to what George Kittle had to say as he crashed the set of the NFL.
George, hello, friend. How are you?
I honestly just came up here to air a grievance.
Oh.
Our team had a memo today that smelling salts and ammonia packets were made illegal in the NFL.
Wow.
And I've been distraught all day.
Okay. Illegal?
He even said he's not practicing anymore.
I considered retirement.
Yeah. So they bring that back for George Kittle.
So yeah, so we got to figure out middle ground here, guys. Somebody help me out. Somebody come up with a good idea.
Send an email.
On you.
Airing of grievances.
Yeah, that's all I had to get out there. I'll get that off.
Before every drive is a
I'm an every
drive.
I'm an every drive.
I've seen guys down. Like that.
I'm an every drive.
In between every play, he's
too much.
That pulls out the
sock. That's way too much.
Yeah. Well, it feels like the energy's still out here, though.
Definitely. Yeah. But I missed those already.
Well, they haven't been outlawed at practice.
Yeah, so I guess I totally missed the bus on that. I realized that the smelling salts happened pregame to get him amped up and even returning from halftime after, you know, a little extended break. George Kittle says he does that every drive to get him geeked up, zeked up. I guess I missed the boat on that, and I guess the players are going to miss the boat on that as well.
I think Mr. Kittle needs to get into, like, ammonia rehab or something. Something along the lines of little girls that have to die every week because they get off on the peroxide burn, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I wonder, so does that mean he's just going to have his own stash in the car before he walks in the stadium now? He's just got to have his own...
Well, the guy gets pulled over. He's looking in the seat next to him. He doesn't have a rack of Budweiser. He's got a whole bunch of little capsules. He's popping the little things. Oh, yeah, man, I'm good to go.
I've never smelled one.
Ready to go.
I've never smelled one of those.
Oh, dude, like those will wake you up like that.
I feel like I'm missing out now.
No. If you would actually ever had one of those things, it is not a pleasant smell by any far stretch. Absolutely. It will wake your ass up, I assure you. But it's not going to be something you're going to be like, wow, I really should do this on a regular basis.
And the other soundbite that seems to have everybody.
oh, dear God, help me.
Is everyone's favorite Jerry Jones once again giving the latest update on Micah Parsons and contract negotiations.
When does it become urgent? I mean, clearly you want him on the field against Philadelphia. When does it become urgent that we need to get something resolved one way or another that he's on the field against Philadelphia?
Again, your definition of urgent is not necessarily... I don't believe you gave a definition
of
urgent. Okay?
I
stay urgent.
Okay. Any confidence that he will be on the field against Philadelphia?
Again, no. Absolutely not. A big part of that is his decision. How would I know that? I'm just saying. No, but I'm urgent.
How would I know that, he says. How would I know that?
You know what? I got a question for the day for tomorrow, even though I'm not going to be here. I got a question for you.
Okay.
When the hell did America start taking 80-year-old people seriously? Come on now. We don't have anybody under the age of 80 that can put together a sentence better than that. Come on now.
Bobby, what makes me laugh with Jerry Jones, and I think a lot of people, is every question he gets, his answer turns into a word pretzel. It just, he goes in these different directions and tries to weave them in and out. Will the guy just talk to Micah Parsons' agent?
Stop.
Can he just talk to his agent?
Stop. This is like the same people saying that there's a certain person out there playing 4D chess when the guy's got the IQ of a soap dish.
No, I'm not saying right, it's smart what he's
dude,
saying.
No offense. If this guy was my grandfather, I wouldn't let him have the remote control, much less anything else. Come on now.
This poor Cowboys PR team. If there's anybody I feel bad for, it's not Micah. It's this PR team. They can't get him away from a camera. Can't get him away from a microphone.
Quit. Seriously, quit. There's other jobs out there, folks. You don't need to do that to yourself. Yeah. There was no amount of money to make me have to put up with that senile fool.
Hey, Bobby, guess what? Tomorrow's game day.
It certainly is, and damn, I can't wait.
It's game day,
baby. I mean that sincerely and honestly. I cannot wait for a real bleeping football game, finally. Even if it's not a real football game, it's close enough.
It is real because it will be on our TVs and in our ears with pregame and the game right here on Raider Nation Radio 920. I am oh so excited. Raider Nation, I know you are as well. We've been doing a lot of talking here on the flagship, the Silver and Black, talking up this team, giving the ins and outs, dissecting what we're seeing, what's missing, what we could see. But for the first time in months, We actually get to see what we've been talking about, what the coaches have been talking about, what the players have been talking about. Put it out on the field. Now, we do have, what is it, about 29 hours or so until kickoff. So we're going to do a little bit more talking until then here on the Silver and Black. But don't worry. Q Myers, your boy Q, on Unnecessary Roughness from 2 to 5, will be joining us here in a matter of minutes. I'm Vince Sapienza, filling in for JT the Brick. It's been a pleasure. Talk to you again tomorrow on the Morning Tailgate, Raider Nation Radio, 920.
Thanks, guys.